Where we explore the fascinating intersection of creativity, technology, and innovation. Today, we're joined by Kieran Reid, co-founder of Two Name Games, one of South Africa's newest game ventures. Mm-hmm. With a background in both academia and gaming industry, Kieran and his team are exploring a unique approach to game design, blending playfulness and creative problem solving to craft bespoke solutions for their client. I hope I got that right, but we'll explain that a bit further. As a key player in the African gaming scene, Kieran is using games to drive change, build communities, and explore untapped opportunities for African narratives on the global stage. With the upcoming Johannesburg Game Festival just around the corner, we'll dive into the evolving landscape of independent game development in South Africa and beyond. Welcome, Kieran.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Kieran, how's it?
Good, and you?
Good.
I think just to kick things off, maybe just give us a very quick breakdown about yourself, your background, interest in games. Interestingly, and strangely, I kind of know your face, but weirdly, we've moved in the same circles for a number of years now, but we've never actually met or chatted, which is odd to me. So maybe just, tell us a little more about yourself. You've been involved in all kinds of things.
You didn't even meet at Fagugez.
Nothing. We did Fagugez this year.
Ah. Oh.
Yeah, but okay. We've seen each other in many other years.
Ah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so I mean, I studied theater. That's what I was really interested in. So I do have a theater background. And then for my master's, I started to research where theater and video games actually collaborate. And where there's a tie-in and how they are similar, how they're different, those kinds of things. And in that, my supervisor was actually in Wits Digital Arts, and the game design department was starting then in 2012. So I was there and I was teaching and involved in that way. And since then, I've been in games deeply and totally in love with it. And in particular, my passion is board games. My collection is like 200 or 300. I'm very happy with
200 or 300 games?
Yeah, board games.
Phew.
Nice.
You play all of them?
Yeah. I mean, not all the time, you know.
Yeah, some but of them you have played all of them.
Yeah, but some of them you play for like 5-10 times, then you move on to your next one, you know, there's that kind of thing. But I'm a bit of a...
Some collectibles in that stash of yours, yeah.
Yeah, nice. So and a part of it is collecting. I do like the...
So you could literally play a new game every day the whole year?
Maybe a few games short, but I'll rectify that.
Oh, for the 65, you got 300.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, just to expand on yourself a little bit, I know you were involved in the original Maze Fest. When was that? 2012.
Yeah.
You've been around there. You knew Thorsten Storno, who was Wiedemann, who kind of brought it here in 2010, I think, for the first year. Or was it 20...
I think 2012 was the first.
Was 2012 the first year?
Yeah.
That was, in my view, a learning curve for myself, in the sense that it kind of preceded the development of Fakugezi, kind of preceded the development of what I considered a more consolidated approach to indie game development. And, you know, it's kind of these people came out of the woodwork that I didn't know existed. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. These people, there's these people here.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to tell us a little more about like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, a lot of us thinking about the game industry really amazes what kicked it off. And like you say, it brought everyone out of the woodwork. And all of a sudden there were people from Cape Town. There were people from Joburg. They were meeting. They were talking. They were like, this is the hobby I do, but let's make an industry. Or I've just started this very small company, you know, like Free Lives might have been a year or two old by that point. But it really was this moment of bringing it together and showing what it could be. And what was really great for us was just seeing what the indie space was like overseas and how welcoming it was, how cool it was, how interesting it was. And I think everyone just was like, yeah, that's what we want to do, which is why we still have such a strong indie culture in the game studios in these countries, because they were born from a maze and they were born from that kind of those connections, you know. And Thorsten was like this figure that everyone sort of adored. It was really a time where everyone
mythical
came
beast
together. It was, it definitely was. And
interesting.
Thorsten loves being a mythical beast. So.
Yeah. So you have quite a lot of experience in organizing events and working with local developers. I'm just thinking, what does the our local market look like from what you could tell? I mean, you've also traveled abroad, so if in comparison as well, what does our local market look like? Is it as competitive as the international ones? What are the things that we could look out for in our local market?
So I mean, I think it has the potential, and it's always on the verge of being competitive on a broad scale. You know, like a company like Freelives is competitive. You know, as an indie studio, they're making the kinds of money that indie studios around the world are making. So they are very much just a competitor. But as a scene as a whole, it's really evolving. There's this kind of culture of pushing startups and pushing studios at the moment. The last 5 years has really been like an incubation explosion, and there's so many studios out there. But we don't know if they're sustainable yet. And I think that it's quite scary, but it's also quite exciting. What I think is good now is that government is finally coming on board. And I
Interesting.
think once that infrastructure is in place, we will be able to compete in a different way. I think certainly in African markets, we'll be able to compete. The other thing that has been really successful is working as a kind of service industry. So 24Bits, which is one of the biggest in the country in terms of game space, they don't make their own IP, they don't make games. They just do porting for other games. So taking from PlayStation to computer or vice versa, or
I
whatever the
see, I
case is.
see, I
And in
see.
fact, they were acquired last year by Annapurna Interactive, who's a huge publisher and has made some award-winning indie games. So there's space, I think, for service, and then we can start to get money into the industry as a whole and develop from there as well.
Interesting. You keep mentioning indie games.
Indie games,
What are indie games? Or perhaps what are different genres of games? I'm guessing there's an indie game and there are other.
Tough definition.
Yeah, it is a tough definition. And it's certainly used, it's like there's so much that could define and couldn't define it. To some degrees, it is an aesthetic and a kind of quality. And certainly that was the case in 2012. It's changed since then, but the kind of quality of a punkness, like I'm making games and I'm just doing it, and that's part of the culture that Freelives is really embracing. Team Laserbeam in Cape Town, their whole aesthetic's punk. Ben Rausch is actually in a punk band. But it also just means an independent studio that doesn't have massive funding, that doesn't have massive backing. I think, the culture started in like Europe and America, where you can spend 2 years without a job making a studio. So it's kind of hard here. That's the thing, is we're embracing this indie culture, but it's also really hard in these economic conditions to have indie
Is
studios.
it easier to survive in this in our local market as an indie studio, or would you rather what are,
I
perhaps
mean,
maybe let's start there. What outside of indie games or indie studios, what else is there?
so yeah, I think currently, we only have Indie and 24Bit as a service. There is a new company that's relatively new called Talent Digital Arts, which has funding that comes from the movie sector, I believe, and they have 50 people. And they just sort of sprung up with 50 people. So they're starting to look like maybe what we call a double A. So it's Indie, double A, then triple A. Triple A is like Battlefield and any Blizzard games, all of those kinds of things. Double A is nearly there. Indie's the kind of,
It's like the raw startup phase.
I consider indies. There's an interesting analogy. If you look at what you consider a more traditional artist, for example, there's a mentality or psychology there that I often find in this industry, whereby whether they're starving, whether they can pay their rent or not, all they want to do is actually make their game. Like they have less of a concern in terms of their outcomes or what it's going to bring them in the end. There's a sense of being an artist there, and I think that mentality and that psychology the indie gamers often have. You often find that quality in them. As an extension of that, you mentioned just now, you're still determining whether these studios might be sustainable. And something that I've been surprised about, and I've only come across it in the last couple of months, in fact, in your event on coming up on the 26th, you've got a full little segment on it, which you can tell us about, is that I went to the more local meetup at the Goethe, maybe about 2 months or so ago, and there was a presentation on some individuals there. They were doing how to present your CV. And it was surprising to me in the sense, like, okay, there was lots of people there. I know Joburg has quite an active scene in terms of game developers, those who want to get into game development. But it was surprising to me that there would be that sense of it's moving enough where there's enough industry support that they're talking about presenting CVs and how to get into the industry.
Yeah.
Maybe you've got some comments on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really exciting thing, actually, to see that we're having established enough studios that they have a HR process. You know, if we, like you say, that indie is about making the game, but now, you know, in Joburg, we've got Nyamakop, we've got 24-bit games, we've got Talent Digital Art, who all have hiring processes and kind of ways of engaging, which, as you say, it's showing signs that it's actually an industry now, that it's to some degree a sustainable industry. The problem is the universities and the colleges are producing more graduates than there are jobs. And that's why it has to grow and needs that government support, because they're there. And the meetups at Goethe, which started last year, are now like 120 people normally, except for when it's winter or when the students have an exam due the next day, then it's a bit smaller. But, you know, that's 120 people, and majority of them are students.
Yeah.
There's this body of people who want to enter the industry. And I think a lot of them are going, well, there aren't jobs, even though there are CV places, and I have to, so I'll make my own studio. And I think that's a trend we're seeing a lot of.
Okay. What are these meetups again? I think they are, what, every Thursday? When do they happen?
Yeah, it's confusing. It's the second Thursday of every month. Oh, so it happens once a month on the second Thursday.
Okay, And what are they about?
So really, you know, again, back in 2013, 2012, there used to be these things they were held at the Microsoft Studios in Bryanston, and they were meetups where people shared their game ideas, they shared their stuff that they're doing, they got to play test, they got to meet each other. Those sort of died a little bit, especially COVID and stuff. And now we've decided to bring those back, but change it up in that it also is inviting the students in, because it used to just be developers. So people will come, there'll normally be a talk, a hyper talk. We try to get everyone, like, you have a weird idea, come tell us about it. And then people can play test each other's games. So you've got a build, it's not yet published, you want some feedback, play test it with that, and just meet each other, hang out.
Are those kind of meetups something that you guys promote in the industry, like creating those communities around the industry?
Yeah.
And are there a lot of those?
There's not a huge amount. I mean, there are some ones, you know, there's like We Are VR, there's Josie.js, which is for JavaScript. Cape Town has something called Makers Massive. Durban's actually getting together their meetups now. So there are a bunch. And what is nice is they're generally quite well supported by the big industry players. You know, they're always there. 24-bit's always there. Nyamakop's there at every single meetup, and they're really participating in it. So it becomes dev sharing, like you can talk to your peers, but also meeting the youngsters and seeing what they're about.
Interesting.
Well, this might be a good opportunity then to delve into your Joburg Games Fest, what you guys are bringing on. As I understand it, it's the first one, but there must have been some sort of, you know, catalyst or movement that you decided, now's the time.
Yeah, so in fact, it is the community meetups that led us to say, look, we have 120 people. We have a community here. Let's give them a moment where we're celebrating them, and we're kind of a culmination of what we're presenting. So the Joburg Games Fest, the first year, we're bringing that community together. We're showing what they can do, and then inviting everyone else to see, look, games are happening. Look, there are these studios. Look, there are these people making interesting games, both in Joburg, and we've got some games from like Cape Town and Durban and the like. And we really want it to be a place where people share ideas, but also have fun. Like,
interesting.
You need a party to celebrate the hard work that you're doing, to know that you are a community, and to be proud of that in terms of everything that you're doing. The other thing, reason we started it, is Playtopia exists, and Playtopia.
Okay.
And Africa Games Week. And both of them happen in Cape Town. Playtopia is like an arcade and fun and like weird and wild things. It's a bit like a maze, but in fantastic. Cape Town. Yeah, yeah, it's
really cool.
This
guy, and you leave me behind.
And we wanted to provide people in Joburg the opportunity to experience something similar, who can't go down to Cape Town to engage with those kinds of things. And then the other thing, it's a bit of a passion project. We all miss a maze, so we wanted to bring something like that.
Nice. Okay. Nice. Interesting. Interesting. Are there genres? I know, and I ask because I know you did some work with Fakugezi. And when we looked at the Fakukes event, you could see there like some categories of different creative arts. And I'm asking, with the Joburg Game Fest, are there different categories of games? And if there are, what are those categories that we can look out for attending the festival?
Yeah, so we didn't curate about like picking one from this category or picking one from that category. We rather just curated what we had in. I think as the festival evolves, we probably will have like different categories. But, you know, we've chosen a lot of local co-op games. So that is a game that you can play with like four controllers and you're all sitting on the same couch and you're playing on the same screen. And the reason, again, is like we want to bring people together. So we've chosen a lot of those kinds of games.
Okay.
We've also chosen some like weird experimental things. There's a thing called ADHD Simulator.
ADHD Simulator.
I don't need any more of that ADHD.
It's like a game but a website, and in it you like try and deal with your ADHD, but ultimately you can't because you keep opening different tabs and you keep going down rabbit holes. Right, so it's exploration of what it means, and the artist, it's very dear to her. So we've chosen some that are like artistic expression, some that are like just fun, and some that are wacky. And then we've brought back some classics. So at a maze, there used to be this game called Boxer.
Yeah.
And what happened was the screen was laid down flat and you had a controller and your two dials were your hands, and then you go in this big boxing match and it's like this lovely game where people can watch and stuff like that.
Interesting. Well, that almost sounds like esport.
Almost, yeah. Mm. Not quite. Mm. No teams, no organizations, lots of people watching.
Okay. So is there a particular reason why indie games are not going into esports? What is that key differentiator, or what is that one thing that stops indie games?
Hey? Yeah.
It's tough, but it's a feeling place more than anything.
Yeah.
Is it what?
Anyway, a feeling place. Like it's a, doesn't quite fit. But anyway, yeah, go for it, answer.
Well, I mean, I think it's what Scott was saying. The people who are making indie games are really passionate about their game.
And they're geeks.
Yeah.
Oh. We don't use that word.
Oh, sorry.
I do. I'm a geek. But no, they're like, you know, and I think the comparison to film is quite like they're auteurs. Mm. They're really like invested in their stuff and they're really interested in their stuff. And they're a little bit anti-commercialization, even though they're totally for it because they want to make lots of money and they want their game to be successful and played by lots of people. But it's how you do it. You have to do it in the right way. You can't like have ads and that kind of stuff in your games.
That's interesting. So how do you monetize games?
I mean, in that case, it's just you have to get it downloaded enough and you have to have something cool enough and interesting enough to really just pick up a player base. So, for example, Devolver, which is a publisher internationally, publish some South African games, especially Free Lives, and they've got a marketing and they've got a niche of players, and it's just millions of downloads. Mm. You really have to get people to pay $5, $10, $30 for your game millions of times, and then you've got lots of money.
Oh, so you pay per download. Yeah. So when you download, there's a fee to do that.
So it's one time. That's then you own the game. Yeah.
It's like an app.
Oh, interesting. That's the only way you monetize?
No, it's not. But that's how the indies would do it. They just want their game to be sold and to be accessible in that way versus someone who's making perhaps mobile games, which a lot of the incubators, the young incubators, are making mobile games, where there you can do advertising, you can do subscriptions, you can do all sorts of different ways of accessing it.
Interesting.
So here's a related question. I mean, you've recently started your own outfit, Two Name Games. Maybe just tell us a little bit of what that is. And the space for me is, I got to talk straight, I don't fully understand Impact Games and Games for Change. I mean, I understand it, I see it there. I kind of know Glenn from Sea Monster and how his world kind of works. But in terms of from a starting a studio or starting a business around it, how does that work? How do you approach it?
I mean, so we are figuring that out. I'll be able to tell you maybe in a couple of months exactly how it works. But, you know, for us, it's really what we've kind of taglined ourselves as Playful Solutions, because it's not always a game. Right. And I think what's complicated about impact gaming is that it's this thing that's meant to change your life or change your world in some way. But it's also a game. And a game has very set structures of, like, you want to win, you want to achieve something, you want to play it for certain periods of time. We're really interested in thinking about how play and gameful elements can permeate life, right? And can permeate different ways of engaging with people. So, you know, we're looking at, we've currently got a leadership development program. In that case, we're taking something that's quite standard. Like, you go for your training, you do your strengths training, you do all of that kind of stuff. We've partnered with someone to create a character creation system, which is a role-playing game element, right? So, like, you know, in D&D, you've got your class and you create your character. But in this case, you're creating your leadership identity.
Oh. And just to be clear here, we're not just talking about video games.
Yeah, no, that's an analog at the moment. Mm. But, you know, so then what we're doing is we're taking elements from games and we're taking the playful elements from games and maybe adding them into mundane work things. And in that way, I think that's what we're trying to do, and we're trying to find ways to make those things more playful and interesting. I also struggle with impact gaming as a concept. You know, games can only go so far. And oftentimes, the thing about an impact game or a game that's about change, the people who are going to play it, they already know what you're talking about, and they already are engaging with what you're talking about. So it is a complicated space.
Interesting. So financial literacy games wouldn't count as impact games?
Those would. And I think those are spaces where I think it can be quite useful. But again, for me, it's about how is it integrated? Because the act of playing a game is a separate act that doesn't happen in day-to-day life always, right? You have to consciously go and play a game.
Yeah.
But when you're playful, right, like you were teasing people earlier about that, making sure our angles were correct. Right. That's an element of play that's in your workspace that you're engaging with constantly. So we're trying to find ways to harness that so that it's not outside of everyday but becomes part of everyday.
Interesting.
So, I mean, explain, how would you typically engage with a client, for example? Like, what would be a kind of like a typical case of, say a corporate or some other business came to you and said, we want to use your services? What would be a typical scenario like that? How would you?
I mean, so, you know, to some degree, we're figuring that out. Mm. And I think what's complicated is that there is an expectation of delivering a product. And delivering it to specification and saying, this is what we want. But actually, we're trying to partner with people as much as possible to get them involved in the conversation, to get them to buy into it as much as possible. So we are working with a hospital at the moment and trying to figure out how the environment, both for patients and for, like, nurses, can be more playful. So engaging with them, we'll take them through workshops, we'll invite them to play sort of games of around thinking and brainstorming, and our design thinking is very playful. It's you, like, again, you're creating characters, or you're rolling some dice, or you're doing all of these kinds of things. So we try and invite them into the process rather than just deliver a product. So to some degree, it then becomes slightly consulting and slightly product. But, you know, we are also open. We did a board game about gender-based violence. And in that case, it was purely like the product. This is what was sought after, and this is what we delivered. So in that case, it was just a game. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Interesting. In my head, I'm thinking, how do you take idea from, like, ideation to product? And it's very easy. I have a UX UI background, so I know when a client comes through and they have this product that they want to take to market, it's like, okay, what's the idea? We firstly define that problem statement and understand exactly what it is that they're trying to solve. And from there, we start creating personas. So that process is sort of drawn out very well in my head. Mm. And I'm wondering, what does that look like in gaming? So if, for example, I want to get into gaming and I come to you guys and I go, I want to create a game that almost is like a driving game challenge, but involve taxi drivers. It's gamified. I pay. There's that interaction in the game where people are paying. There are stops along the way. How do we go from that idea to a game that's fully fleshed? That's people are playing, and it's a taxi driver game. It's very engaging. How do we move? What does the process look like?
I mean, it'll depend on what it is, which game it is, what type of game it is. Yeah. I think part of the difficulty of that process is that, like you say, if the client thinks they want a game, but actually they don't, they want an app or they want that kind of thing. But we're helping them figure out what it is that they want. And in terms of the process, you know, I mean, for us, we're figuring it out depending on each client. Sometimes we just go through typical, let's make a game, and we sit down. And in that case, we do act like a studio, and we go through the making lots of prototypes, 6-7 different prototypes, playtesting them internally, taking the client 3 prototypes. They can start to playtest those ones and see which ones they're interested in, and then go through the full development cycle after that to reach something that they want to engage with. Then the marketing part and the getting it into the user's hands, that's the big problem.
Okay.
That's something we're struggling with. And like I said, the new industry players are also struggling with. What if the studios are trying to figure out, how do I get people engaged there? For me, I think it's really about tapping into different spaces where games could be. You know, there's Wi-Fi on taxis. Why is there not games that are associated with that kind of thing? There's lots of different things that could be happening there. So we're really excited to figure out some of those problems and take it to the next step.
Here's a problem for you. Is there anything you can do to help out newsrooms? We need a bit of fun in our lives, man. We need a bit of fun.
I'm sure.
Hey, man. I'm trying to get this newsroom fun.
I recently played a game where you run like a 1950s New York newsroom. It was really, really good.
Cool.
I mean, you know, that's part of what we're enjoying about our work is that we don't have packaged solutions. So, you know, you ask, how can we help with the newsroom? Well, let's spend time together playing around with the different ideas, playing around with your different problems, and spending time really like embedding in that to try and figure out some of those solutions. And sometimes there won't be one. Sometimes it might just be newsrooms are difficult, and that's the end of it.
So, I mean, last year when the elections were on, we were looking at developing a game around the elections, and it really turned into just a kind of like a poll, like a fancy poll for the most part. Like you there's a number of questions, you select your answer to the question based on multiple choice, and then that kind of associates you with the appropriate party you should be quote-unquote voting for. But I wanted to make it a little more fun than that. So I was chatting to Sea Monster about that a little bit, but of course it was a bit expensive. It wasn't really possible for us to do it. But nevertheless, thinking about it for me was the important part, like saying, okay, we need, as a newsroom, as a publication, we need more engagement. We need to access audience in a different way, in a fresh way. And the problem for me was interesting. And obviously, we didn't move forward with it. But nevertheless, that for me, it's almost like that's one of the solutions around, you know, if you want to stay in the news lane, you've got to approach people differently in a different way. That's fun and engaging, like a game would be. But at the same time, you're not undermining the issues that you're dealing with. So, I don't know. I would love to bounce this idea around a bit more, but maybe this isn't the forum. But nevertheless, that's a problem, right? It's something for us, like, in newsrooms still have a little bit of money, still huge audiences. But then, you know, how do we play with
but
that
within, skills,
within your world?
Yeah. I think his skills will help.
Absolutely.
With it. Your studies are in creative arts, right? And theater.
Yeah.
Right. Now, what does that intersection look like?
Well, for me,
arts, theater, and gaming, how do you bring those three together in a way that's more engaging for the user? And
well,
I think essentially that's what the newsrooms would look for, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, it's all about the audience. And
that's
where the correlation was. And that's also why I like events. So Joburg Games Fest, I'm doing something for an audience. It's really my passion, is like a kind of viewing games, viewing art as a service. Right, to other people, rather than taking that auteur self-expression. For me, it's really about that. And then it's about figuring out how they engage. Why do they engage? How do we make the engagement worthwhile, as opposed to just the thing that you do? And in many ways, just talking it through and playing with the ideas over and over again is what we want to do, whether we find a solution or not within that.
Okay. So that would involve a lot of storytelling in the gamification of whatever that process would be.
Yeah, I think narratives are hugely important in how you engage someone, right? And the thing about storytelling, and when we talk about it, we often view storytelling as quite grandiose. You know, like it's a story and it's that kind of thing. But actually, it's everyday things. We tell stories, right? You know, if I'm late, I was stuck in traffic and then this guy was there. You were stuck in traffic. That's all that actually matters. But we tell it.
We tell the story behind why you got stuck in traffic. And
That's how we communicate and that's how we engage with each other. So our storytelling sometimes is on a kind of, I don't want to say prosaic, but almost prosaic level, like just every day.
Does the diversity of this country offer, or rather contribute to how the industry can be creative? Have you seen games that incorporate cultures, that use the city landscapes, different characters from different cultural backgrounds? Are we seeing this thing happening in the gaming space, or are we still getting there?
We're starting to see it. And again, it's that younger generation who have a different aesthetic and have a different objective in what they're trying to do. They're really starting to explore that in much more detail. I think, and this is one of the tensions that exists in the South African gaming scene, is making local games sometimes, how are we going to sell that? Where are we going to sell that? Right, so are we going to sell that abroad? Will anyone buy that? Are we going to sell that locally? Will we make enough money? And there's a tension around that that has existed for quite a while. And we're starting to see a change a little bit and in different moments.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Almost, does it mean that the South African population isn't interested in games that sort of have their context or resemble them?
I mean, I think to some degree, it's just about the staggering quality of the rest of the world.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm going to pick up my phone and play a game. This one has local content. That's cool, but it's got some bugs, or it just doesn't look as good.
Okay.
You know, so there's a tension there as well. South African players are global players to a large degree. So they're going to play the best. Just like everyone else in the world is going to play the best. But again, it's how do we find ways of entering into different spaces where that's the case and we can actually get down to people. There's so much research on games and so much research on studios. There's basically no research on audiences.
That's interesting.
Who are you creating for?
Yeah, well, it's the big question, and a lot of people are creating for Americans.
So that was actually the next question I was going to have for you, because you know, really, what do you feel is the opportunity for South African studios and game developers to enter the market? What I mean by that is, I know his name completely I forget his name, Nigerian guy. He recently released a report, the Games Report.
Hugo Obi.
Which leads to my question. I haven't read the report yet, but he was saying, yeah, okay, look, these are the opportunities. These are what Africans are doing. This is what they're doing on mobile and so on and so forth. But is that the space we should be looking at? And again, which leads to your question, because me from a newsroom perspective, the only thing that matters to me is audience. Like if there's no one reading our stuff, then what are we doing? So I think the same should be applied for games. And you're right. You just said it, but I hadn't thought of it before. But I was like, yeah, that's actually the missing part in a lot of these perspectives in terms of what's been built. Even what Nyamakop's building, very much an African game, but it's like, okay, well, how's that? You don't know, I guess. But I mean, who are they really thinking about targeting? Because it's not local.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the audiences here are very confusing, and it's hard to engage with them, and it's hard to think about what they actually want to touch on and what they want to do. So that local content is it's a difficult one.
Is it? Yeah. I would imagine Americans would want to play a game with Shaka Zulu in there.
You see, so I mean, this is the thing, is possible, and I think that's certainly what Nyamakop is attempting to do with their new game. They haven't released any details, so we don't know.
We can't talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've heard
You guys know, you just wanna
whatever.
I see. But they're really attempting to do something that's similar to what Black Panther did, but in a less problematic way, right? It is actually local and is properly researched and it is properly engaged with from an African perspective, but still sells that, like, this is Africa.
Yeah.
Right? Because that does have the potential to sell.
Right.
But again, then you're making a game for an American audience, so you need to understand the American audience, so how much local do you put in? Whereas if you're making for here, you put in a lot of local, but then it's a different...
Right. So, but I mean, wouldn't that be the best way to start? The international audience would have interest... I mean, like the tourist would, like the history of the country, the tourism attraction, landmarks, and you don't include the entire cultural experience, but you just pick the stuff. Again, back to research. You research what most tourists are interested in or what the international communities are interested in. And you just include those little parts in there. And as you create your games, it just shows a bit of Durban, a bit of Cape Town. Popular characters in South Africa, you Shaka Zulu there, Skukuni here. You know what I mean? That, I think, if it speaks to the history of the country, anybody who likes reading about countries will sort of go, oh, that's interesting about this country. I did not know this about this country, and I'm finding out in a very interesting game. So it doesn't have to be Zulu guys dance in the traditional dance kind of game necessarily. Yeah. But if we incorporate that kind of history into the game, I would imagine we should see some uptake.
I mean, I think so. That's something that I've been like advocating for. Right. It's like you know, you can make an international game that's just set here. It really, stories are universal ultimately, right? There's specific stories that'll apply to you and your culture and your culture. But a story is still a story, and you can do that. I think Nyamakop will try it and see what happens. The other difficulty is, overseas markets are so saturated. There are hundreds of games released every day.
There you go.
And
what a perfect, this is perfect time to bring some of that African content.
No, exactly. So my question would be, do you feel then that it almost sounds like the opportunity then for some local South African developers is to actually push more local games? If I'm not mistaken, I think like Space Salad Studios is a little quite local example of that. I haven't dived into how their studios is doing or you know, what kind of support they're getting. But, you know, in terms of the missing factor I'm seeing here within a lot of local studios is marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, there's this game I saw. Is it Brocall? Is it called Bro or Brocall?
Broforce.
Yeah. Hey, man, I told you this game is... Now, imagine if your bro was Shag.
Yeah. Well, there is a game called Bootfighter. Oh. And it's a like beat 'em up where you scroll around and punch each other and you're like butts and stuff like that.
Right.
So, but it didn't get huge success, but it, you know, it does. No, and
I'm
we're starting to see that.
Right. Look at the, you call it Broforce.
Broforce, yeah.
It's making, it's getting attention internationally, right?
Yeah, it did well, yeah.
Now, if we included characters that were within the South African context, that's, game would still have made
no, because that game sells 80s action icons. So like instead of RoboCop, you're BroboCop. Instead of Rambo, you're
Yeah, there's a particular cultural reference in that game. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's again
I get your point though. Get your point.
Bro Shark.
I'd like to see.
You know what I mean? But I'm saying there are ways you can do this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just wondering why. Is it a fear or is it like factual, this won't work?
I think it's a fear. I think it's like we need to sell this game. The people who are buying are overseas. Let's make a game that'll appeal to them.
Okay.
I think you can do both. I think you can do both.
Is that a rubbish Netflix model, right? Netflix sponsors shows in South Africa that follow a particular trend internationally. And if that show that you produce here follows that algorithm, then you are sure for success.
Mm.
So the gamers are also following similar trends. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things we could unpack here about the games industry. Mm. I mean, I'm dying to like just go all the way down the rabbit hole. but I think it's more like a number of conversations as opposed to one. But I mean, a last question from my perspective would be the marketing aspect I wanted to bring up. So I know it's a gap for a lot of studios, partly because of cost, obviously. Mm. You know, a lot of the huge game budget, a lot of that is marketing budget. I don't know, what would be your view as to the solution here? Is there a gap? Is it a low cost opportunity? What would be your advice in terms of a lot of the local studios that, okay, they've got a game, they've done their test with the audience, they know it kind of works, that gets a bit of picked up. What would be your advice in terms of how to maybe...
I'm not sure that I have at this point because you say, it's just such a staggering cost. I think one of the things that I've seen in South Africa and in Africa that's changing over the years is actually it's not just marketing, it's the whole business structure. I've met with some studios who have like such a cool idea. The art is great, the mechanics are great, but there's no one who's the business person. They haven't hired someone who's the business person who can think about marketing and think about we actually need 50% of all of our budget to be marketing just for this kind of thing. So it's something that's changing, but we don't have that business sense yet.
I guess it's just an industry maturity aspect as well.
Yeah, it really is. But also, I mean, to some degree, it's like, let's say the three of us are all designers and we start a studio together, just the three of us. None of us have ever done any business. None of us have ever had an experience in that. And it's an entirely different skill set.
Yeah.
You know, you're a creative, but now you're having to learn SARS and you're having to learn this and you're having to learn that. And some people can do it, but I think that that's the gap. And I think the more we embrace and say, actually, hey, you're an accountant, just come join our company. You're cool. You like to play games. That's good enough for us. Join us and help us with that kind of business structure. And then I think we can start to figure out the marketing once people are doing it and have tests. Cases. And again, though, we do need that audience research, that understanding of what's hitting there. And that, you know, some of the big places are doing that data, but it costs so many thousands of dollars, it's not accessible for anyone here. Yeah.
Again, I'm trying to avoid going down the rabbit hole. I want to ask more questions, but I think.
Go down the rabbit hole. I'll pull you out.
So like, I think just in closing, I'm going to ask if you've got any sort of like overview perspectives in terms of you know your views moving forward with your own business or and how that relates to the broader game industry, but also you know I'd urge all the listeners to actually try and check out the Joburg Games Fest. Yeah. It's on the 26th of October at the Goethe Institute in Johannesburg. It's just for the day. Starts early though. Starts 9 or so.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very early for gamers, but we'll.
Well, we've put the workshops in the morning, so those who are really committed are the ones who sign up for workshops anyway, so they'll be there early.
Okay. But yeah, and if you ever have any comments further on that festival, but also...
Wait, when is it happening? Do we have a date?
Next 26th. Week, Saturday, 26th.
26th of... What is this?
October.
26th October. Where? Address?
Goethe Institute, Johannesburg, which is 119 Jansmuts Avenue.
Hey, okay. 119 Jan Smuts Avenue.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what can we look out for in the festival?
I mean, so the festival is going to be a lot of fun. It's all about play. So there'll be games the whole day. There'll be workshops in the morning. There'll be talks from some experts and some startups. So it's really interesting set of talks that we're having. And then we do have like some interactive installations that we're trying to do. One of them is actually about the history of games in South Africa. So we've got a little like mini gallery around that because we're really about celebrating all of that kind of stuff.
Is it the history of like digital games or like games?
Just digital games. Okay. We didn't want to, because but also then our timeline would be like,
okay,
2000 okay. years, then nothing, right. 94 or 30 seconds, okay. and the like. So it's digital mostly,
okay,
around that kind of space. And you know, it's family friendly for everyone. Okay. I mean, obviously, I think some of the talks and stuff might not be super family friendly. That's for the community, but the playing is open and engaged for everyone. Yeah. And in terms of the community and the industry as a whole, I see so much happening that's really positive. And I think that I've seen it now for 12 years, just keep trying things. And there's a resilience there that I think will ultimately lead to something that is completely sustainable. It might not be as big as everyone hopes as quickly, but I think it will get there if people just keep trying. This government involvement is really excellent. You know, Africa Games Week is sponsored by their tourism thing. So it's clearly something that's really important to people. And then we just need to figure out what people want to play and how we get them to play those games. And I think then we're really in a good place.
Interesting.
Easy hurdles. Just figure out what people want to play and get it to them. Boom.
Just get a bunch of kids in the room and find what games are on their phone. You'll know what they want to play. Is it that easy?
Well, they all want to play Roblox.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just actually,
put Shaka Zulu in there.
But that's, I mean, maybe people, maybe some South African studios should just be developing for Roblox and Fortnite and figuring out how you can actually make money there potentially.
Yeah, Roblox is the candy crush
of games. There's a tip for free for our listeners, or any game developers out there. Develop for Roblox and see where it goes.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll make some money there.
Could do. Jaren, unless you've got any closing questions?
Me? I don't know. He covered, I didn't even ask you about AR and VR. Do we see a lot of that in the gaming industry?
I mean, certainly some in like more artistic spaces.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just it's so expensive.
Oh, to put on the goggles and play.
Yeah. So even on a global scale, we don't see that much VR in terms of games. We see some, you know, like some of the big companies, they know they have enough players to reach a market. But we certainly won't see that here because the developers probably will also struggle to get access to the equipment to develop on to make it.
There goes my hope of putting Shaka in a VR glass.
Yeah. Well, mind you, the Audience Choice Award at Fugazi was a VR game. Stick fighting local, I don't know, what was the name of it? Do you remember?
No.
I'll show it to you, a local stick fighting game. Traditional.
That one? Yeah. At the Fugazi?
Well, like an Audience Choice Award, yeah.
Oh, nice. There you go. There's your research. The audience is liking that kind of content.
Sure, but the audience there are like creatives and people in different artistic spaces. Right. It's not...
Hey, I've tried to advocate for the African content.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming through.
Sure, thanks for
inviting me. Yeah, we enjoyed having you there. There's lots of other deeper conversations we could have, and you know, I'm sure we'll have you up again and maybe talk about something a little more about deep dive into what you're working on as well. So yeah, appreciate you coming
through. Thanks for coming through, Mr. Reed.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks.